one of my favorite lines of his was when he had a meeting with Rogers Martin, who was the head of the Republican National Committee, and I think he was 6'8", and he came back from a spirited and difficult meeting. Bryce came back and said, I saw Martin, and we had an eyeball-to-kneecap confrontation.
Throughout Dwight D. Eisenhower's presidency, Bryce Harlow was rarely far from the boss. During that time, Harlow performed a variety of important functions in helping him run the country. But there was one job that he was especially well-suited for. Bryce Harlow was President Eisenhower's main speechwriter, Eisenhower staffer Ed McCabe.
He probably was the one man more than anybody else who the president looked to on a tough speech-making assignment the president was doing. It might have been the State of the Union message, you know, some critical thing in the work of the White House. We all knew there was only one real speechwriter for President Eisenhower, and that was Bryce Harlow.
By the time Harlow came back to the White House for the Nixon administration, his main speechwriting days were behind him. But he still never forgot his old speechwriting roots and occasionally pitched in when needed, as Nixon speechwriter William Safire remembered.
He was a friend and a colleague, and also he was a member at the very beginning of the Judson Welliver Society. That's named after Judson Welliver, who was the first White House speechwriter in the Calvin Coolidge administration. And Bryce was one of the early members because of his work on speeches for Dwight Eisenhower. And he had a hand in some of the Nixon speeches, too. And he was a higher category in the hierarchy than the speechwriters. But he would remember his old profession and give an input whenever he was called upon.
Writing speeches at the presidential level is one of the most demanding and specialized jobs in all of Washington. There were only a handful who can do it at all, let alone do it well. According to most accounts, Bryce Harlow did it better than just about anyone else. Ed McCabe spoke about Bryce Harlow's abilities as a presidential speechwriter.
Bryce wrote the book, so to speak, on that subject. He's the polar star for others who tried to follow it. He just had something, he had an extra gear in his system, I think, which allowed him to become the speaker of the speech, you know, which he's working on. And never saw anybody else who could do it as well.
Eisenhower staffer and presidential historian Stephen Hess.
He was such a good wordsmith, such a good speechwriter, that early on he had been called in for lots of Eisenhower speeches. And in fact, I think he was largely responsible for hiring speechwriters by Eisenhower so that he could relieve himself of those chores, which is not what he wanted to do. That was fairly unusual in the White House staff. I mean, previously and even afterwards with Lyndon Johnson and Kennedy, a lot of folks involved themselves in the president's speeches. That is, there wasn't a shop that was just there for speech writing. But I think Harlow promoted that idea of having full-time speech writers.
One of the full-time speech writers that Harlow brought into the Eisenhower White House was a young Harvard professor and writer named William Ewald. Ewald remembered what made Bryce Harlow both a good writer and an effective leader of the speechwriting staff.
He knew he could produce meat and potatoes, factually accurate, very hard-hitting prose, and his principal concern was accuracy, making sure that you got it right. He was very strong on staffing things out and on letting people who had key responsibilities, like the Pentagon or economics, so whatever their responsibility was, he saw to it that that guy was brought into the speech process.
When Harlow spoke, his impressive vocabulary was evident. But when he wrote, he had the unique ability to choose words that were appropriate for both the audience and for his principal who was giving the speech. Again, Ed McCabe.
Bryce not only could immerse himself in the subject matter to a point where he could converse intelligently about it, but he could put it all in words the president was comfortable in using. Now, that's a trick to write for anybody and be able to transpose yourself in that fashion. And this is a tough area to work in, speech writing.
Each president puts different demands on those who write their speeches. In writing for Eisenhower, Bryce Harlow was presented with some particularly unique challenges, as Stephen Hess recalled.
Now, Eisenhower was a tough guy to write for because he didn't have a very distinctive style. Also, he had been a speechwriter himself for Douglas MacArthur. So he was not an easy person to write for in that way. Nixon, on the other hand, was an easy person to write for. He had a distinct style.
William Ewald remembered a reaction Eisenhower once had to a speech Harlow had presented to him, and which further illustrated the unique challenge of writing for Ike.
So he said, you know, I used to write speeches for MacArthur out in the Philippines. And he said, one thing I know, if you get 12 people sitting around a table looking at a speech, all the character goes out of it. And it has been hard to take. He said, next time you write a speech that has some character in it, bring it straight in here. Don't show it to anybody. And that's the way you preserve character. Well, you know, that was against nature for Bryce Harlow.
Although Harlow's time as a presidential speechwriter is well documented, a significant part of his work remains unknown. That's because Bryce Harlow held true to a long-standing value that speechwriters have had for many years, the passion for anonymity.
I think Bryce Harlow is known and will be known to people who know and love the White House as really a fine public servant, but he's not famous like Henry Kissinger or Pat Moynihan or some of the more better-known speechwriters, Sorensen and Schlesinger and Valenti. And he did not become a public figure in that sense. So I think there's a lot of us who are probably better known than Bryce was. But I think there was it used to be called, White House aides were supposed to have, quote, a passion for anonymity. That's died.
Well, the passion for anonymity has passed. Bryce was one of the last of the Mohegans on that. He really did not make an effort to get himself covered. And he was not preparing for his post-White House employment while he was in the White House. The need for a claim of, I wrote that speech, or I'm responsible for that elegant phrase, or powerful phrase, he did not. He was of the Louis Brownlow school, who was the man who coined the phrase of a president's aides should have a passion for anonymity. And that's what Bryce had.
Finally, both William Sapphire and William Ewald recounted some of the lessons that Bryce taught them about writing speeches for the leader of the free world.
I think what I learned from Bryce, I remember one time I showed him a draft, something I'd done, and he looked at it. He said, well, it's pretty good. It makes good sense. It's got good information in it, but it doesn't hit people. It doesn't bend people's ears back. It doesn't get people up and running. That was the main thing that I learned from him, accuracy and pace in what you were writing.
He would treat every statement as a potential to get into trouble, and he would edit out the trouble. And he would demand, in his gentle and quiet way, accuracy. And little accuracy, I mean, small details, he said, that can trip you up. And if you're wrong about a minor thing in a statement, that casts doubt on the whole statement.
In the following segment, we will explore Bryce Harlow's role as the White House's bridge to Congress. It's a role that he pioneered and played for two different presidential administrations, and it would ultimately become his signature job in public life.